Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and thought leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
And welcome to another edition of Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau, your host. We have three wild thinkers here today from a variety of perspectives, I think. We have a couple entrepreneurs. We have kind of a budding young entrepreneur, Alex Rodriguez. Am I wrong in saying you're a millennial?
No, that would be correct.
It's not pejorative, though.
No, it's not.
Okay. And he's with Workman. That's one of his... We'll find out more about your many business permutations as we proceed. And then we have an experienced entrepreneur, Gloria Freeman. And what are the names of your businesses?
Hi, Steve. One is Olu's Home, Olu's Beginnings, and then Olu's LLC.
Okay. In the course of this program, we're going to find out who Olu is.
Okay.
So, and then we have... maybe a budding entrepreneur, but a consultant, an international consultant from an international place like Italy. We have with us Stefan Perugini.
Right.
And I pronounce it right?
Yeah, perfect.
I'm going to stop right there because that's one of my main challenges in life is getting names pronounced correctly. We are here talking about, you know, just having a general conversation about things that come up. And the most experienced one is you, Gloria. So I'm going to pick on you first. And you have a very successful company, right?
I guess.
You know. Okay. Tell me how many times you've been named some big something by a business magazine or.
I've received a lot of, I would say, a number of awards, and I'm very humbled by that as well.
So I'll make you talk about them.
Okay.
But and so when we were with Minnesota Business Magazine, you were one of the Power 50s.
Yes.
So you got notoriety there as well.
Yes.
But how did you start out? Now, you run Olu's Home and Olu's different things. Mm-hmm. First of all, who's Olu?
Olu is a Yoruba word from West Africa, and it means so grateful to God. And it's also part of my daughter's name, and her name is Oluwatoin.
Okay.
So I use the word Olu for what it represents. Hmm. It has a lot of meaning to me.
And what sorts of businesses are these?
So Olu's Home, I started 20 years ago in September.
This is the
20 years.
We're on the anniversary.
Yes, here. Yes. I'm pretty excited about it, and pretty, you know, happy, humble, all of those things at the same time. So that is residential housing. We started out with residential housing, and that we serve as adults that are developmental disabled, severely mentally ill. We started out doing that, and then we branched out into the assisted living for seniors.
Hmm. Well, I actually had a job before I got into media. I was actually working in kind of a group home type setting.
Mm-hmm.
It's called an intermediate care facility.
Mm-hmm.
So I was one of the people that would take people's temperature and blood pressure and give them medications and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's pretty much some of the things that they do now in our residential sites.
So if I need a job?
You can come and apply.
No guarantees?
No guarantees.
Okay, Stefan, I just met Stefan yesterday, but he was so interesting. Now, tell me a little bit about, now, you're Italian, but you weren't born in Italy.
No, I wasn't. I was born in Venezuela, so I'm blacklisted from the United States. But then I moved because my parents are Italians, and I moved from Venezuela when I was almost five. And I grew up in Rome, in Italy, up to 25. And then I sailed and I said bye-bye to Italy. And I've been quite around the world for up to now. I'm a young 40 years old.
Young 40 years old. And so now you have like an anchor wife, right? You have
yes.
Married to a Twin Cities woman.
Yes. This is the main reason probably why I'm here, and I think as many international people. And also we have a teenager now, and he's handful, and it's good we are here because we have help from family and relatives, and where we were before, it was quite difficult for us. We were alone almost, yeah.
Hmm. Well, when you travel around the world, that's what happens. You find yourself alone.
Yeah.
Now, Alex, you're from the Twin Cities?
Yep, born and raised.
So you're never alone. You probably have a lot of family and know a lot of people.
Yeah, I got a good amount of family and friends here.
Now, but you're an entrepreneur. How did you start out? Were you one of those people that graduated from college in 2008 or something like that, and there were no jobs, and so you had to start your own? Or what's your story?
Yeah. So I would have graduated in 2016.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I actually took a leave of absence to kind of start the company. And you know, the short story is I've always been interested in technology and startups, and I grew up in a construction background. My dad owns a residential remodeling company, so from a young age, I knew I was going to do a business, and then when I got into technology, I knew, okay, I want to do something with tech, and that's sort of why I decided to fuse the two together, just because I saw there was so much inefficiency in the construction industry.
Did you help out your father remodeling and things?
Yeah, so from a young age, he would kind of take me to kind of do, he does a lot of roofs and siding, so at a young age, you know, I would spend a lot of my summers with him kind of working. Not the funnest, but you learn a lot.
Well, yeah, you work hard. Did you like the tools?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, I assume you mean like the materials and tools we use?
Yeah.
I mean, you use like a nail gun and stuff, you know, to shingle and so forth. So I mean,
not
I guess
people
the job
do,
done.
Huh? No.
No, not other people.
There you go. Because one of my short careers, I was a carpenter's apprentice for a while.
Okay, cool.
After graduate school. So I didn't last long because I was so slow. But the part that I loved was buying new tools. I had a tool belt, and you put your hammer here, and your slide rule there, and all these different things.
You played the role.
I played the role.
No, you did take pride in your tools when you get a new hammer.
And so around the house, whenever something breaks, oh, good, can I buy a new tool now to help fix it? And so that's how I collect my – it's like Christmas for a lot of people. You know, you go buy a new tool. But now your tool is technology.
Yeah.
You play with that.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I think I'll be in this industry probably the rest of my life, hopefully.
Now, how did you start? Now, I know you've had different concepts. The great thing about being an entrepreneur is you're out on your own. And what I found is that when I went out on my own, I found out my boss was a total idiot. Because there's one thing doing the job, but then making money at it and doing the books and all that stuff. But how was that for you to start out like that?
Yeah, so I mean, even before I started Workman, like I said, kind of I found love with technology at a later age in life. So I'm not like, you know, a lot of, you know, founders you hear like, oh, you know, at a young age I was programming and I was trying to hack stuff. That didn't really come to me until like high school, really more my senior year. So from, you know, around that age is when I really started putting kind of side projects. None of them really went anywhere, obviously, since I didn't work on any of them. But I would just do a bunch of like random side projects, you know, small businesses. Like I tried doing some consulting, a clothing brand. I tried doing like an on-demand roofing app, but I really never really got it to take off. And then the way I kind of came about with Workman is our original kind of mission or vision was always to build the best marketplace to find construction talent. And at first we kind of launched by trying to launch a project management tool for small residential contractors. That didn't really take off the way we wanted it to. So then, you know, we've gone through a few pivots, and now we're a marketplace that helps real estate investors with their remodeling and maintenance.
Hmm. So, Gloria, so you need some maintenance done at some of your facilities?
Yeah, well, yeah, we have a couple maintenance guys that take care of, like, major. They're not maintenance guys. They're actually, people that work on property do, like, lots of things. But I do need a maintenance guy to for our commercial building and all of our residential houses to take care of the lawns and the snow. And I found out, I realized this year that, you know, instead of hiring outside, I probably would be better off employing someone myself.
With this snow, I've been feeling like doing that myself rather than shoveling my own driveway and lawn. Now, 20 years, how did you start your business 20 years ago?
Well, I was an underwriter for group insurance. I underwrote group insurance and I got laid off. And I felt like I didn't want to go back into that field. I mean, it was a pretty good job, decent salary. I just didn't feel, you know, fulfilled.
Right.
And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I knew I didn't want to do that. So I ventured off and I went to, during that time, they give you a little money to do different things. So I went and the company I worked for invested, in, you know, to help us get into other fields if we wanted to. And I took up a trade, osteology, skincare.
Oh, really?
And, yes. And at the time I was married to a guy that owned a hair salon. And my thought was that we were going to open up a day spa. And, well, actually, before I finished school, he was divorcing me. So, I mean, it's funny now, but it was not that funny then.
There goes your spa.
Yeah, there goes my spa. And so I tried to do a little bit of that work, you know, after I graduated. But you really have to build a clientele. And right. I was a single parent at that point. So I ended up working for a friend of mine that had a couple years before had started what I have now. And I realized that, you know, I really just love serving people. And so I went the route of getting my own license through the state and through Hennepin County. And that's how Olu's came about. Olu's Home came about.
Wow. So you were laid off.
Mm-hmm.
That prompted you.
Yeah.
That's kind of the necessity as a mother of invention.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, you had to figure things out.
Hmm. And Stefan, now you've traveled all over the world, and I know you've worked in Africa for a while. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, well, it goes back quite a while before going to Africa. But yes, I mean, like, you know, when I was young I was really intrigued by social justice and working with communities and working for empowering different people and mainly the most marginalized. So, of course, Africa was one of my destinations since then that I had in mind. So when I finished my master's degrees and while
degrees?
I was...
Degrees?
Yes.
Plural?
Yes.
What were they in?
Is in international development and political economy and then international relations. And,
three of them?
Yeah, yeah. And so...
Okay,
and,
you're the smart one in the room.
Yes, I think so.
That is not an indication of being smart, you know? That is an indication of someone that probably lost a lot of money doing something. But
I think more than that.
But yes, because, you know, quite vocal in international development in economics. So I studied economics. I have an economics background. And so it happened to, you know, through my university, they told me, do you know, Stefano, that are you interested in going to work just for 3 months and help the poverty alleviation unit in Yemen, the United Nations Development Program? So I said that that was a very important, you know, opportunities that is not given every day. So as an economist and young fellow, I mean, I said, yes, I really do like the idea of going to Yemen. And then I stayed there for 5 years.
Wow.
You know, before leaving Yemen, after doing what I was supposed to do and working with the government and building relationship and doing a lot of work in terms of preparing the projects and to jumpstart in Yemen. My supervisor gave me a piece of paper and said, if you sign this, I'll see you next month. If you don't, we'll keep in touch and see when we can work together next time. So, yeah, so I signed that paper. And and after 1 month, I was back in Yemen and I was responsible for what it was called the Integrated Framework Programs for the United Nations Development Program.
Well, working in Yemen and helping build things, isn't that what they're bombing now in Yemen?
Yes, it is so indeed very... All the work that you do in development when there are... you know, when the country is a volatile country where the rule of law probably is going to disappear at a certain point and it's already low in a country, yes, of course, then is the difference between humanitarian aid and life-saving and development that is improving the quality of life of people. So we were actually doing quality of life of people, improving the economy for Yemen and doing projects in different fields, agriculture, fishery, trade licensing.
Well, don't you get angry when they start blowing it up?
Yes, but I got more angry when I was in South Sudan and all the work that we were doing there went completely, destroyed when in December 2013 there was the civil war. So I left Yemen during the civil war, and all the work that we were doing with our partners, so with the United Nations, European Union, the government itself, and many international organizations and local organizations, communities, you name them, and so much money that we pledged into, you know, making sure that as much as possible healthcare was functioning in some hospitals, and you know, there was collaborations and growing opportunities, empowering of communities and stuff like that. Then in few minutes it's all gone. And now, you know, like South Sudan is the first recipient of humanitarian aid in the world because they are like in a horrible situation, I must say. And I left South Sudan, you know, like emergency situation and evacuation plan, and left also helped by the Blue Helmets and implementing the, evacuation strategy for...
Well, the Twin Cities must seem so boring in comparison with all these places in the world, Yemen and South Sudan.
Well, I was saying I had a three-year-old.
A three-year-old child.
Yes. It's quite, you know, like always working between development and humanitarian aid, right, and life-saving at a certain point. So, yeah, no, he keeps me busy, but at the same time, I'm consulting at the moment, and I'm consulting for different organizations, mainly looking internationally, mm-hmm, and working on humanitarian aid and international development.
Well, the Twin Cities is a fairly international place, but we have trouble getting Minneapolis and St. Paul to cooperate. So that's one of our challenges here.
Oh, well, I was talking to different people, and I don't want to name them all, but, you know, the discussion has always been like how the Twin Cities is so global, and mm-hmm, you have so many Fortune 500 here based, and so they have such a global remit, but there is almost zero international remit. So mm-hmm, if you see the Twin Cities from an outsider, mm-hmm, or a person that comes from outside and, you know, trying to find his own way or working, and you literally can see that Minnesota is global, but it's not international.
Mm-hmm. That's strange. Well, Gloria, when you got your business going and growing for 20 years, what were the big challenges? I mean, we weren't having wars here, but what challenges did you face on growing your businesses?
Money. Finding enough money to operate my business.
You needed
to grow it.
You needed international humanitarian aid.
Yes, I need something.
How do you get money? I mean, to invest and buy new homes so you can...
Yeah, Yeah.
Provide service.
Well, now, you know, now I have relationships with bankers, and so it's not as difficult for me to, you know, get a loan for a home, to buy a home, what I do now. But like I said, we own Olu's Beginnings now. Mm-hmm. And 3 years ago, we opened up this early child program. It's a holistic program. We're green. We teach our children, we grow food. We teach them where food comes from. And they're very much, that's very much a part of our program. And nutritionists, we don't feed our children any preservatives. It's a very green environment, holistic in the sense that we have seniors within the building as well that works with our children. So I'm looking to scale that business right now. And so if you know anybody that's willing to invest in what we do, okay, send them my way.
Nice to hear.
Call out for investors. So, so money, I mean, do you ever feel like you're in a part of the world where you're ignored?
Well, of course. I'm a woman and I'm black, and so I'm mostly ignored. Ignored most of the time. So
it's part of the Twin Cities schizophrenia. It's the most livable place, but yet it's like the fourth worst place for African Americans to live.
Yeah, it's a tough place. I mean, it's what you call the nice Minnesotans, right?
Minnesota nice.
They'll smile in your face, but their back, it's a whole different story.
Wow.
I wouldn't say everybody. We're just joking here. But, I mean, there is some truth to that,
sure,
as well.
Alex and I were born in Minnesota, too. So
yeah. Right. Yeah, I was not. I was born in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're a transplant just like Stefan.
A long time ago, though.
He's a little further east. That's the only difference.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So so racism is part of the barriers you have to face in trying to raise money, too?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that, you know, businesses of color have a tougher time getting credit lines or getting loans to support their businesses. Yeah, I absolutely would say that. Hmm. We do.
Does success, when you've been successful for 20 years, does that help?
I guess I wouldn't say it helps, but I think what hurts us as a community is that trying to create good relationships. It's like the good old boys club, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say people only do business with people that they know, right?
Right.
So it's trying to create that atmosphere that I'm one of the boys.
So who do you play golf with?
I really don't play golf,
but
I go to the golf tournaments and I let the good old boy hit my club and I have a drink.
Oh. So you're learning to edge your way onto the greens.
I'm learning to edge my way on the greens.
Wow.
I make a lot of jokes.
Well, that's
or
good.
Tell a lot of jokes, I should say.
What challenges have you seen, Alex?
Yeah, so I can definitely relate to, like, the money issues. And going back to your point about how it's, like, a boys' club. I mean, I think it's like that, you know, especially in business. Like, you do business with people you know. I've seen it firsthand. I know a lot of people who, you know, they have their circle. So it's not that hard for them to go start a business and go raise $300,000 or $500,000 or even $1 million just based off who they know.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I think we have to do things to kind of break that circle and make it more inclusive. I think honestly the best way to kind of break that is we have to have, you know, people of color, black and brown founders, mm-hmm, sort of start their own successful companies where then we can kind of start, not necessarily start our own circle. Mm-hmm. We don't want to continue that cycle, but, you know, the way to kind of, you know, redistribute that wealth is, you know, we got to have the people we know then be able to kind of, you know, give them money. Because,
break the
barrier. Because I know that, like, you know, if I succeed as a workman, there's going to be a good chance that I'll be an angel investor and I will likely invest in the people I'm really close with. And my circle looks a lot different than the typical circle that you might see in the Twin Cities in the technology field. And it's getting better, but yeah, it goes back to like that Minnesota nice thing. Like, mm-hmm, at the end of the day, people still do business with their circle. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to break that, but it takes time, and at the end of the day, you know, it's better to focus on getting customers, you know, for revenue. Hmm. Like, we tried going down the fundraising route a little bit in the early days, and it just wasn't really working. And I've seen a lot of friends, you know, go down this route as well. And, you know, the best thing you can kind of do at the end of the day is just focus on your business, get revenue, and really kind of get so good they can't ignore you, because then they'll want to invest
in some ways. I would say Mita is doing a really good job right now of creating that kind of, I don't know if you heard, like Mita had the $1 million challenge.
Right.
And it was superb. And I'm a board member of Mita, so I'm one of the people that just love Mita. But to be perfectly honest, they are doing some phenomenal things right now. They're trying to break that barrier for a lot of business owners of color. And I'm very proud to be a part of that.
Right. Mita's giving away money, and they need more money to give away, but even
right.
with that million.
Right.
We're talking here with a couple entrepreneurs and a consultant, so I guess everyone's out for themselves to try to make their own living. We have Gloria Freeman from Ilu's Home and all the Ilu's, the whole Ilu line. Huh? Olu.
Olu's.
Okay, let me change that. And we have Alex Rodriguez here from Workman. And we have Stefan Perugini.
Right.
New to the Twin Cities, but just look out. Pretty soon you're all going to be good old boys, right?
Yes.
We'll be back right after this.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back with Synapse Think Tank of the Air, talking about, the challenges. I mean, whether you're doing developmental work, is that maybe what you mean, Stefan, earlier when you said Minnesota is global but not international? It seems like there's these fractures. I mean, if you're a person of color, you're kind of ignored. You may as well be in another part of the world. Is that what it means? We're not cognizant of the variety of people we have here?
I think there is a vast variety of people, and there is a vast, diversity and community. I think Alex was saying, people like doing things among themselves, and it's very difficult to break the circle. And I see that, and I see that also in places where it's not supposed to be so difficult. So it's not supposed to be so difficult to break the circle for, you know, working organization that work internationally. But I see it is. So
you're trying to break into circles too, because you don't have a natural network here in the Twin Cities.
No, I don't, but I'm lucky enough that in the last few months I met so many people, and especially in the philanthropic community, also in the corporates, and building a lot of relationship. Also because my kind of personality and my kind of work, also when I was working with UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, and I was working as head of partnership relations with institutional donors. So for me, fundraising is one of the things that I've always been doing. So how can you do fundraising if you don't have personal relationship with people and interconnections and being, you know, understanding the communities and how the philanthropic interests works in the place where you are. I mean, like, it's tougher.
Well, you mentioned UNICEF. Didn't the U.S. just pull out of UNICEF?
Well, that is political, so I don't know if you want to talk about politics in the United States. But I can say about politics...
We can't really separate politics from everything else.
But what I can say is, you know, like, I left London with Brexit, and
Are you a Brexit victim?
No, I decided that also from a political point of view, I was not recognizing myself being and living in London after Brexit.
Because Brexit was kind of an anti-immigrant vote.
Yes.
And you're an immigrant in England.
Yes, 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 yes. But I think that's the problem is that many people that voted for Brexit didn't know what they were voting for. The campaign that was done for Brexit was based not on facts, but on completely, you know, different things. I think it happened here in the United States. But
they were focused more on the money.
Is the beggar thin neighbor, mindset mm-hmm. that you have when you think about neoliberalism or being very conservative and looking inward. So it's a kind of cyclical thing. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, you start thinking that what you are doing internationally is not for your personal benefit, but you are taking money from your local country or from your local communities or from your country and putting money in other governments or in other places that do not have a return on investment as much as you can have if you invest in mm-hmm. your country. But that is a very blind way mm-hmm. of looking at the thing, because the return on investment actually is much more. People like to think that one of the mentality that I see here that we can take the healthcare in the United States is like people say, why should I pay for healthcare for my neighbors that is dying of cancer? So this is why we want healthcare private. And even though it's fine for the healthcare to be private, it's not fine to not understand that if your neighbor is dying, it has an effect on you, mm-hmm. People don't really. They generally look at their own backyard, mm-hmm. and they say, okay, that's everything is all right. But when they look around, and if around things are not fine and are not as good, they tend to close themselves instead of helping other people outside.
Well, it sounds like a similar syndrome that.
They don't understand. They don't understand that if the community where you're living in is healthy, you are healthy.
Right.
If you are living alone inside the community, I'm sorry. What's your life like?
Mm-hmm. Well, Alex,
yeah. And just to add to his point, really quick, too, I think he made a good point too. How like, as humans, like I think a good example is this: is like if you have grandkids or like great grandkids. You tend to like love them more than like you love yourself. You want them to do better than yourself. But as an individual, you're still going to make decisions that are better outcomes for you, even if it's going to have negative consequences for the future, because you tend to discount that less.
Climate change.
Yeah. You
right. we're doing those things now.
Yeah. It's like, not you know, how can I benefit myself the most, you know, right now, regardless if it might have a negative consequence in the future. We tend to do that a lot. You know, you might like, I might look at like my nephew and nieces who I love and be like, oh, you know, I want them to have a better life than me. But as an individual, I'm sure that when I make a lot of decisions or like some of the votes I do, it's like, how can I maximize my well-being in the current moment?
Well, I think the thing is, people, we pretend that human beings are rational. But I don't think it's true. They usually go by their emotion. They have some sort of drive, their mm-hmm. will, mm-hmm. and driven by desires. And reason kind of comes in there somewhere, but it's not the first thing. Thank you.
We truly are our brother's keeper, though.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't. We tend not to look at things that way.
Because we're caught up in our own things.
Because we're caught up in our own things.
Wow. So there's a certain universality there, but. It seems to me, in working with the younger entrepreneurs, there's a better sense of cooperation than among some older types of capitalists. Is that true, or is that just my impression?
Yeah, I mean, I think this goes back to like what we were saying about like, you know, the old boys club, you know, mm-hmm. with like capitalism and so forth, or just money. I don't think that'll necessarily change long term in terms of like the clique, because as humans, you know, throughout history, we've always kind of had our cliques. You know, we always had our small communities. We always identify with a certain community. And I don't see that changing because that's a hard norm to kind of change. You know, it's biological. It's been passed down, you know, for, you know, centuries. But what you do see with this younger generation is sort of, you know, what people like to use, like the woke generation, where we want to make it more, we want the baseline to be more equal. You know, we want everybody to have an equal chance to create sort of their own club, you know, where, you know, why can't she start her own club? Why can't I start my own club? Why can't we have the same opportunity to start a successful business or run for office? And I think with this younger generation, they're definitely, it's definitely shifting towards that, where it's like, hey, everybody should have an equal level playing field. But you're still, I think, going to see sort of those cliques with people. I mean, I do this myself. You know, I won't lie. I think I have my clique of friends, you know, who I mostly hang out with all the time on a consistent basis. And I even have my clique of entrepreneurial friends who I usually, you know, go to for the most advice. And I see this with other people as well.
Have you seen anything different, Gloria, with the younger generation as far as cooperation? Or what's been your experience?
Oh, exactly what he's saying. I mean, I totally agree with what he's saying. That I think the younger generation are really doing things to try to create this atmosphere where it's, you know, and I think it's been going on for a long time, mm-hmm. too, not just with the younger generation, but they're starting to create opportunities where you can see that happening, you know, compared to, you know, generations ago. So, yeah. I mean, times are changing. That's just the way, we're going through a cycle. I mean, this is life, right? Mm-hmm. Things change.
Well, the whole demography is changing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot has been changing during the time, and this is what we call globalization. Now mm-hmm. you have your smartphone and you can reach everywhere, yes. anytime. Something that a few years ago that was not even thinkable, and I think that technology is pushing a lot of change in the society and the dynamics of people interacting mm-hmm. To each other for the good and not, you know, mm-hmm. like it's but definitely I think that globalization has been changing mm-hmm. how we interact. Now today, I mean, like everything is interlinked. Economy is interlinked. Social justice in interlink. If something happens in one country, the effects that you have of what is happening in another country on your own country is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot think that we were talking about Brexit before. You cannot think that the UK leaving the European Union next month will not have a tremendous effect on the United States. You cannot think that what is happening in Venezuela now mm-hmm. is not having repercussions on the neighboring country and, you know, butterfly effects on all over the world. Well, petrol crisis, all is interlinked. And this is also... you know, pushed by technology, and this is also like what Alex was saying. I mean, there is a change going on, but it's hard to see it,
mm-hmm.
and hard to see probably also for the new generations that what the new generation are doing, it's actually already a change of what our fathers were doing before.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a big emphasis with technology on social media and all that stuff, but nothing has ever replaced actual socialization. So to meet people in person and to network and get along. I mean, I know, I think when I first met you, it's because you were in the Women's President's Organization,
mm-hmm.
Gloria.
I'm still a member there.
So now what does that do for you, meeting real humans that are peers, other CEOs?
Yep. It you know, I'm a part of a few organizations like that, but it helps. What it does for me personally, it gives me a sense of that I'm not the only one in the same boat. I mean, really, that's the truth. You know, you go. I have peers that go through the same struggles that I go through. And, you know, so I go there for support. I might get information, or I might support other women like myself and help support them. But what it really says is that I'm not on an island all by myself.
Because at your workplace, you're the boss.
I'm the one and only.
You don't have peers.
I do not have peers. Yeah.
And same thing with you, Alex, right? You belong to different organizations? Or?
Yeah, I don't belong to too many. I do run one organization called Gravity here that I'm a co-founder of. And Gravity essentially is a social venture that helps bring professionals and founders of color who are interested in technology and startups. And the reason I started that is pretty similar to like what you said. The reason I'm a part of these organizations, the reason I started Gravity is because when I first broke into technology, it took me a really long time to build a network. Granted, I think I've built a really good network in technology here, especially locally, but it took me a really long time, and it was really hard. So part of the reason we started Gravity was, like, it shouldn't be this hard to build a network and to feel like you have a sense of belonging, especially as a person of color. So what we try to do is bring people from everywhere in the technology field, because we have a lot of local organizations that do a really good job. It's like, how can we bring them all together for, a monthly event? And we try to bring somebody who's kind of done that, you know, who's built a successful company or they're doing it right now to kind of, you know, get inspiration and be like, hey, you know, if she can do it, I can do it. Like, you know, they have a similar, you know, uprising as I did. And I think that's powerful. You know, I think, you know, not to shift topics, but like there's a lot of debate about like how do we create, you know, more wealth and so forth. And I always tell people like we need more black and brown Zuckerberg, so to say, because for me, that's like the biggest motivation. If I see somebody who looks like me who's running a company the size of Amazon, like that just shows me that, hey, I can do this, you know. And there's nobody doing that right now. So you have a generation of us here who are trying to do that.
So the good old boys aren't your role models.
I'll contradict myself and say, to me, they are in some ways, not necessarily them themselves, but I mean, I've worked for local companies here. Like, for example, before I started my company, I worked for When I Work, and they're a successful, you know, mid-stage startup here who has raised, you know, Series B, Series C money. And I think Chad is really smart. He's a great product person. But having worked at some of these startups, I kind of realized that, like, hey, these are just regular people like me. You know, they're smart, but they're just regular people. It's not like they were assigned some, you know, ticket that was like, hey, you're going to start this company.
So you can get an inspiration from them.
You get inspiration, yeah.
I'm a firm believer if she or he can do it, so can I if I want to.
So as the owner, you have to set your own standards.
Yes. Yes. That's, you know, I think as for me, I had to set my own standards and made sure I believe in the standards that I set for myself.
Do you ever get lonely being on the top, lonely at the top?
Well, yes, I do get lonely at the top sometimes, because sometimes it becomes frustrating for me personally when I know sometimes people might not get what I'm trying to say, and they look at me sometimes in a way like, who does she think she is? You know, I mean, when I'm at work, I'm the boss, right? And not everybody's going to agree with what I think or say. But if they want to work there, they have to abide by the rules that, right. And I usually try to create rules that we all agree to within my organization. I'm not a one-man show. I know that I can't make all the decisions to create a successful company, that I'm not the only brains within that, the people that work within that company. I get that. But at the end of the day, I do have the final say. And sometimes everyone's not going to agree with what I may decide to do.
What's the biggest thing you've learned running your own company?
I guess probably the biggest thing that I've learned is that it really does take a lot of effort on everyone's part to create what I want to create.
So you need good people.
You need good people.
Is that getting tougher these days?
It's tough.
How many opening positions do you have right now, open positions?
Well, I just filled the director of HR the other day. But the area where we hurt the most is the position called the DSPs, and those are the people. They're the
Service provider.
Yes, and those are the most important people because they're the ones that provide the direct service to the people that we serve that live in the homes, and yet we have a difficult time keeping our staff full in that area.
Wow. Talking here with Gloria Freeman from Olu's Home.
Yes. I said and Olu's Beginnings.
Olu's Beginnings and all these things. Alex Rodriguez from Workman and Gravity. Mm-hmm. And Stefan Perugini, from an international consultant from Italy, now living in the Twin Cities. We'll be back right after this.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back on Synapse, Think Tank of the Air with Gloria Freeman, Alex Rodriguez, and Stefan Perugini.
All right.
I got it right. And now hiring people. Alex, have you hired anybody yet? What's that like?
We've hired a few. It hasn't really worked out just because, like, I think hiring is really hard. I mean, one is we're also, like, cash constrained. We don't have the luxury of hiring, you know, market rate shit, and we're trying to hire at a market rate just because I think that, like, a 10x hire is worth more than, you know, a few good hires. But, yeah, hiring people is definitely hard, you know. Hiring interns is even harder. We tried hiring interns, and that has actually been harder just because it's, you know, interns usually want, like, a lot of structure, a lot mm-hmm. of, you know, processes. And as an early-stage company, we don't have none of that because we're kind of building it on the fly.
You know, well, you've changed your business model, what, in the last week?
Well, we haven't changed it. We just added a new maintenance thing that we're –
Added a new thing.
So we did change it from, you know, about a year ago when we were doing the project management. But now we're a marketplace. But it takes time, too. Like, you got to let the business evolve because – we've been a marketplace for about a year now, but when we first were a marketplace, we tried focusing on construction companies to help them find their labor, so subcontractors and workers, and we had some success with that. We still do some connections that way, but what we found out was that once a construction company finds a really good subcontractor or worker, well, they're going to hire them or they're going to, you know, put them kind of on a recurring contract basis mm-hmm. because you don't want to let go of that person. If I found you, Steve, and, you know, you're a really good electrician, well, I want to keep using you for as many of my projects because I know how hard it is to find another good electrician. So, you know, we let our business evolve, you know, going back to, like, the basics, you know, like, listen to customers, talk to customers. And we found that real estate investors is a really unique niche that hasn't really been tapped into, and that's kind of why we focus on them. And the reason it works well is because real estate investors, a big part of their business is buying distressed properties or properties that are kind of beat up or they're not maybe worth their full value. So they know that they have to go in there, and if they do X amount of renovations or remodeling work, they can sell that property for X amount higher, or they can, you know, rent it out and make X amount of cash flow. But a lot of real estate investors don't like dealing with the construction process. You know, it's some of them say it's the worst part of what they hate about, you know, buying properties.
But as you're going through this learning experience, it's hard to hire someone and have them catch up sometimes. Right, to change along with you unless they're on the ball. And Gloria, you have people that are, do you have anybody there that's been there the whole 20 years?
Yes, I do. Well, not the whole 19 years.
Close enough.
Yeah, I have.
But they have, like, a sense of the business that a newcomer won't have, right?
Yeah, they know their job, their work really well. So I rely on them. I have them in different areas. So I have some people that's been in upper management with me for a while, and some, you know, that does the direct support service or supervisors that supervise the direct support people. I also have my executive director at Olu's Home. 4 years ago, she worked for me for about 4 years, and now she came back. She was a program director at the time, but now she's the executive director. So she's knows the business quite well.
Well, and Stefan, you've worked with people, recruiting them to go and work, whether it's Yemen or South Sudan. Is it hard to get people to go to those places, or are there Peace Corps types, or what?
I hired many people, along my career. And of course, I hired different people with different skills and with different backgrounds. And I would say from people from India to Senegal to the United States. So, you know, people come from all over the world because it's an international market. So you compete internationally and not locally. So when you apply for jobs, you know that you are not applying for a job that a person from the Twin Cities applied for, but you are applying for a job where from Japan they are applying for, from Kenya they are applying for, from Italy, from the UK.
So the
market is quite it's quite strong, I would say, and there are many people that, like me, have a vocation to work internationally or to work for local communities, because there is no importance if you work internationally or you work locally. Always with the most marginalized you work, and for them and with them. So, something that I want to stress is that even though the background that I have is widely international, that doesn't mean that doesn't fit with local communities and understanding their problem. As you are understanding the problems the local communities have in Kenya, you cannot miss the local communities' problems that they are having in the Twin Cities.
What do you think are the biggest problems in the Twin Cities that need to be solved to be more international and maybe more cohesive?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, this was a very interesting session because I can understand, you know, also how difficult it can be for a black woman being one of the rare species out there, and how difficult it can be to be having line of credits, access to credits, having the possibility to, you know, prove yourself. And I think, like, here there are so many other people that have so much talents and so much capacity that they are not given just the opportunity to do that. Here there is a big Somali community in the Twin Cities. A lot has been done, a lot is going on, but there are also many other, you know, ethnicities and minorities in the Twin Cities. I see that there is a lot of work that corporate social responsibility from corporates are doing for the local communities, foundations are doing for the local communities. I think that there is, honestly, a very vibrant philanthropic hub here in the Twin Cities, sometimes even bigger than what I think is in Chicago. So to go back to your questions about hiring, I mean, like, yes, I mean, there is, in a global market, it's probably easier to find, you know, people and numbers of people willing to take up that position. And it's very important. It's a very difficult process. It's probably is a very challenging process, and you have to take care of many things when you hire a person internationally, because not only they are competing with a vast, hub of people that are applying for the same job, but also you have to understand what the skills they bring in. Maybe that person didn't do that job. This is how I do the hiring. Mm-hmm. Maybe that person didn't do what in the job description is written there, but has the skills to do that better than a person that already done that. Hmm.
Talking about the opportunity gap, do you see that lack of opportunities for people in the Twin Cities, Gloria?
Oh, yes, of course.
Tell me about it.
What do you want to know?
what do you see? What examples can you see from your angle?
Oh, I mean, there are opportunity gaps in every facet. Education, health, business, you know, there's definitely opportunity gaps there.
A lot of work to be done.
A lot of work needs to be done.
Now, you're on the board of MEDA,
Yes.
They're doing a lot. What else are you doing? And do you have? I would assume someone like you is asked to be on a lot of boards.
No.
No?
No.
Oh, here. You want to be on my board? No.
That's not true. That's not true. But I'm on Meta Board, and then I'm on Hennepin Theater Trust Board.
Oh, that's a good one. Mm-hmm.
It's a theater. I love the theater. And they do a number of things, educational things, that I don't think they talk enough about, but they do. They work with Fair High School local, and they work with high schools throughout the state with, you know, theater and education. So I'm on that board as well.
Hmm. What about you, Alex? Are you involved in any of those things? Are you on any boards or?
Yeah, so I don't sit on any boards. I've been asked on a few I won't name just because.
You refuse them?
Not that I refuse them. I just think that, like, starting a company is really hard, and I've learned, like, how precious the time is right now in the early stages, and work mm-hmm. takes up most of my time.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I do have some free time, I just prefer to be honest, and I'd rather have that free time to spend it with friends or family.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. It's a couple of full-time jobs to be an entrepreneur.
I mean, it goes back to, like, it's like the same with, like, advising companies, right? I try not to take any official advisory roles, for one, because, like, I'm still figuring this out myself. So,
mm-hmm.
If I'm going to give advice, you know, I'd rather just give it for free. You know, like, don't, like, you know, this mm-hmm. helps me out just as much. And also, too,
these sports are, I'm not paid.
Right.
You're not paid, so, like, and I don't expect to be paid if I'm on board, but it is a time commitment. I'm sure you can
remember. It is a time commitment. Yes, and, like, it is.
I've noticed that whenever I've thought about joining a board, it goes back to, like, I try to avoid having as much meetings as possible, because anytime I would see, like, a board meeting or, like, a organizational meetup, I dread the meeting. Like, I just would be like, oh, I got to go to some location at 6 o'clock. Like, do I really want to go there? And if my heart's just not there, you know, I'd rather just, you know, like, find – it's also, I'm also doing the organization a favor, because they can find a board member who's more –
You want to. You have to be engaged.
You have to be engaged.
And when you say entrepreneurs work a lot of hours, but we do. But it's also, when I think about that, it just comes natural for me. It is. It's something I love doing. It's not like a job for me.
Your work at Olo's.
Yes, it's my life. It really is. It's a part of who I am. That's how I identify myself.
So you get energy out of it.
I do. I love it. Sometimes my expectation is kind of off for my employees. But for me, it's very much who I am.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do, pursue your bliss, right?
Yeah.
Have fun in what you're doing. Are you having fun, Alex?
Oh, yeah, I love this. I mean, I've always wanted to start my own business, and, like, especially when I fell in love with technology, I knew, like, that's what I wanted to do. And sometimes I have to, like, remind myself that, like, I always thought I would have done this at a later stage in my life. Mm-hmm. I kind of figured that I would have, like, entered corporate America or a more established company, kind of build a reputation at some kind of, like, you know, sales or marketing role, you know, kind of build my network.
And then drop out.
Yeah, but then, like, you know, sometimes you just kind of bite the bullet, and the opportunity presented itself. And it's one of those things where, like, I couldn't wait. And now that I'm actually doing it, like, you know, as hard as it is, I wouldn't want to do anything else. And,
yeah.
And I feel like, you know, it's almost also kind of like, you know, it's
stressful.
Yeah, it's stressful, but I'm also like.
Super stressful.
Yeah, but I also feel honored to even be in this position. Because going back to, like, the opportunity, like, I didn't grow up having, like, you know, super wealthy family, but also, you know, my dad has done well recently for himself. You know, he's been able to build, you know, a successful roofing company, you know, that I saw from a young age. You know, he really built it up over the years, so I had some privilege in that way. But, you know, it also goes back to, like, you know, I want to succeed, because I feel like if I succeed, I can create more opportunities for others, because I think talent is distributed evenly, but opportunity is not. So if we can give people the opportunity, I think we'll be able to create more wealth.
Right.
Especially here in the Twin Cities, I love to see people create more wealth. And wealth can mean a lot of things. It can be business, it can be art, music, theater, you name it. But it's hard to give sometimes people that opportunity.
Well, we're just about out of time here, but I want to ask Stefan, are you convinced now you should become an entrepreneur too and dive into this?
I think I am in a certain way. And And I'm helping different courses, and I'm a consultant at the moment. I'm on my own, I would say. I'm doing what I can, and I think that I'm doing what I like doing, like the fellows here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a job. It's something that you really like doing, and something that you want to do, is something that you have a passion for. And this is why Alex was saying, by joining the board member, it's a responsibility, first of all, towards the organizations, and it's also, you know, time consuming. So you really need to be devoted to what you're doing. And I wanted to mention that I am now, you know, working as in the development committee for the board members in One Village Partners here.
Oh, okay. So you have a nonprofit.
Yes, I have. And I'm, you know, like, I'm really vocal about them and what they are doing. They are doing a great job. And I think that they are doing also very important things for local communities in Sierra Leone. So this is why I joined them, and I'm working for the fundraising and growth strategy of the organization.
Okay, so we all have our work cut out for us.
Yes.
I'd like to thank you for joining us here on Synapse Think Tank of the Air. Gloria Freeman, Alex Rodriguez, and Stefan Perugini. I'm Steve LeBeau, and our special thanks to Dan Culhane, our producer. And also, I'd like to mention this is a co-production with WCCO Radio. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.